Red Saturn, October 2024. Hello, and welcome to your talking newspaper for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill and this is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, October the 19th, 2024. I do hope you're all well. The music I'm playing this week is a track from an American bluegrass band called Rackhouse Pilfer. It's entitled Fallen Leaves, in keeping with the season. The recent wind and rain haven't quite blown all the leaves off the trees, but it won't be long now. They've kindly allowed us to use it on Talking News. And as usual, I'll play it in full at the end of the programme. About freedom and change, look in your eyes like it meant everything. This week, following the news stories, the radio listings and the audio-described TV listings, we have the next instalment of 10 Today, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Next is our Events This Week in History, which will be followed by the sounds of nature provided to us by the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. This time we're in the Masai Mara in Kenya. A couple of articles from Hearts Life magazine are next. The first of these is about the Fire King, Arthur Brock, whose fireworks firm, originally established in Islington in 1668, moved to Hemel Hempstead in 1933. The second is the story of Violet Cressy Marks, the most travelled woman of her age. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Penny, Bob, Hilary and Lucy.
Hello there, this is Lucy, and it's really great to be reading for you today. The first story is about a builder who fell victim to a £95,000 scam. A builder has been left in crippling debt and suffering from panic attacks after being conned out of £95,000 by a social media scam. Colin Theobald fell foul to the fraudsters after answering an Instagram advert for cryptocurrency in June this year. The scammers sent Colin a link to a convincing website under the name of a legitimate company through which he was able to log in to track his so-called investments. Unfortunately, Colin invested £45,000 of his late father's inheritance and went on to borrow a further £50,000 in total. "I'm struggling with it all emotionally," said the 61-year-old. "Towards the end of each month, I know I've got to pay off the loans and it plays on my mind. I have panic attacks. It was also so convincing. I was in a bad place at the time as I'd suffered from pneumonia for months. I was really ill and also got sepsis. Everything was on top of me." He's now paying more than £1,100 a month to service these debts. At one point, his investment portal said that he'd made £220,000, but when he tried to start withdrawing the money, he was told he needed to pay an additional £15,000 to pass anti-money laundering checks. More excuses came from the scammers as to why they needed additional money to withdraw the funds, which is why he started the borrowing. Since then, Colin has enlisted the help of law firm Richardson Hartley Law to help reclaim his money using the company's website, www.nationalfraudhelpline.co.uk. The firm's service not only helps scam victims recover their money, but also aims to produce anti-fraud technology, campaign for change and educate the public on how to avoid being scammed. Colin's bank, Revolut, has initially rejected his claim to be recompensed, saying they gave him sufficient scam warnings. The law firm has now advised him that they will raise a claim on his behalf through the Financial Ombudsman Service.
Shoplifter sentenced after stealing £200 of food and alcohol. A prolific shoplifter has been sentenced following multiple counts of shoplifting across Hertfordshire and Northamptonshire. Chris Cairncross, 36, of no fixed abode, from the Harpenden area, was sentenced to 22 weeks imprisonment at Hatfield Remand Court on Tuesday, October 8th. He pleaded guilty to 5 thefts of food, including meat and alcohol, from the BP Marks & Spencer in Harpenden, Waitrose and Sainsbury's between September the 23rd and October the 2nd, 2024. He also committed a further 3 thefts in Northamptonshire. Cairncross admitted criminal damage to Harpenden Building Society on October the 2nd and 6 breaches of his Community Protection Order, or CPN, which includes not begging or leaving rubbish in Harpenden. Harpenden Neighbourhood Sergeant Mark Essam said Cairncross has been causing problems in Harpenden, including begging. We have referred him to partner services, but he refused help with his lifestyle and he disregarded the conditions of his CPN on 6 occasions, as well as stealing over £200 worth of food and alcohol. The sentencing comes during a St Albans police crackdown on shoplifting due to a significant increase. In line with a national trend, St Albans and London Coney has experienced an increase in the number of shoplifting offences, now averaging about 100 a month. There were 650 offences in just 5 months from April to September. St Albans District Chief Inspector Martin Turpin said, "We know who our main shoplifters are, and we are working with security staff and advising shops about improving CCTV opportunities." Traditionally, shoplifting goes up in the run-up to Christmas, so we are trying to deter and prevent it from happening. We will arrest shoplifters and we will continue to release photos of potential shoplifters if we need help identifying people. As part of Safer Business Action Week, which started on Monday, October the 14th, a dedicated team of plain-clothed and high-visibility officers will work with security staff at shops in St Albans City Centre and Coney Fields Shopping Centre in London Coney.
Hello there, this is Hilary. New board game to put City on the map. The beloved family board game Monopoly has released its very own St Albans edition, featuring the very best of the city's landmarks, charities and streets. On Monday morning, the Hearts advertiser was invited to the Odyssey Cinema to witness the game's official launch, accompanied by other well-regarded businesses and people from the city. Among those guests was Mayor of St Albans City and District, Councillor Jamie Day, who hopes the new board will put St Albans on the map. It is wonderful to see the historic city of St Albans celebrated as an official game of Monopoly, he added. Landmarks and businesses received recognition on the new board, with St Albans Cathedral and the iconic clock tower replacing the original blue squares. The game's most affordable squares, the brown set, were replaced by the Roman Theatre and Sopwell Nunnery. In between are the great and good of the city, including St Albans Market, the Odyssey Cinema and Verulamium Park. In all, more than 30 St Albans landmarks and organisations feature in the game. 2 charities joined the board too. Following a nominations process earlier this year, Youth Talk and the Ollie Foundation were awarded with a square. Chance and Community Chest cards are also customised. One card sends players to the infamous Monopoly Jail for speeding through Fishpool Street. Ella Gibbs, custom games executive at Winning Moves UK, who produced this edition, said they were spoilt for choice when creating St Albans boards, as she introduced the famous Mr Monopoly. "We produce official Monopoly games based on places all over the world, including in recent years Palm Beach, Dubai, Phuket and the Hamptons. Now St Albans has joined the world's Monopoly elite." At the ripe age of 93, the mascot danced and enjoyed handing out the new game. Now in its 10th year, the event's hosts, the Odyssey has firmly become part of the St Albans culture. Bethany Nicholson, front of house manager, said, "We are thrilled to be featured, as well as to be the chosen launch venue for the new St Albans Monopoly Board." Monopoly St Albans Edition will be available to purchase at Waterstones and WH Smith's, as well as online.
Hello, this is Penny. Cards for Good Causes opens pop-up shop. Cards for Good Causes is returning to Harpenden this week. The charity will be selling Christmas cards, advent calendars and gifts at Harpenden United Reformed Church in Vaughan Road from October the 17th. The money raised will go towards national charities and the local community. Over the last decade, Cards for Good Causes has raised more than £22.5 million for a network of over 100 charities, including NSPCC, RSPCA, WaterAid, Shelter, Carers UK and The Ramblers. In addition, they've contributed over £2.7 million to local churches, libraries and community projects. Christine Ansell, Chief Executive Officer of Cards for Good Causes, said, "In these times when every penny counts, we're delighted to offer shoppers in Harpenden a unique opportunity to support charities that are changing lives while also strengthening local communities. Thanks to our committed partners, seasonal staff and local volunteers, we're returning to the hearts of neighbourhoods across the country, providing a meaningful way for people to give this Christmas." The charity has been opening shops around the UK each year since 1959. If you can't make it to a pop-up shop, the full range is available online with same-day dispatch and free shipping on orders over £40.
Our next story is about a Pride rugby match which raised over £2,000 for the Stonewall charity. A PE teacher and rugby player from St Albans is on a mission to challenge homophobia within the sport he loves, raising more than £2,000 for charity during a Pride event. Matt Borrell, who is gay and plays for Verulamians Rugby Football Club, organised the match at his home ground to raise awareness of homophobia in sport, something the 20-year-old has sadly experienced firsthand. The Grove Infant School teacher said, "I've been called a homophobic slur on the pitch and I felt that that was the last straw." On Saturday, October the 5th, members of Hearts Pride and over 300 rugby fans, young and old, watched two matches at the Verulamians Clubhouse in London Coney, which was decked out in rainbow flags in aid of LGBTQ plus charity Stonewall. "It went really well," Matt said. "We had so many people turn up across the day, it was just perfect. I was very proud and emotional when we'd finished. I cried walking off the pitch." As well as the men's and women's matches between Verulamians RFC and a Hertfordshire wide barbarian side, the day featured music, food and children's entertainment. Matt said he felt really proud to be involved in the event and was pleased to have rugby players and fans share their stories with him. He added, "People spoke to me and said seeing me do this and seeing the club support the event makes them feel more comfortable, allowing them not to worry about what's going on off the pitch and just play rugby." During the day, attendees decorated the London Coney Clubhouse and players signed a specially made Hearts Pride jersey. Each team also received an end-of-game talk from Matt about inclusivity in the game. "I wanted them to know how much it means to me. My message was this. It's a good start, but we're not going to stop here," Matt said. "Hopefully we can make it an annual event until the message is heard not just in Hearts, but across the wider rugby community." And you can still donate to Stonewall by visiting justgiving.com/page/Verulamians RFC Pride Event.
A St Albans roofer will soon venture into the personal training and fitness scene with his new gym. Chris Blow, known for his work with Total Roofing, is looking forward to welcoming his customers to the newest gym in St Albans. Based at 413 Hatfield Road, Total Fitness will be a space for classes and training opening on Tuesday, October the 22nd. The unit, formerly home to CS Flooring, has undergone a complete transformation, including fresh matting, a selection of dumbbells and squat racks. Chris said, "We want to help people achieve their goals and lose weight. We are offering boot camp, boxing classes, and offering help with nutrition. On site will be professional PTs who are fully trained in all aspects of fitness and first aid. Total Fitness will offer student deals due to its location near Oakland's College and Beaumont School, also allowing walk-ins. We want to help the local community like we did when COVID hit," Chris added. Chris works for London Coney construction company Total Roofing that won many awards over the years for helping the St Albans community, and a Facebook page and website are being launched in the coming weeks.
District supports smartphone-free childhood campaign. A pact to enable children to have a smartphone-free childhood that has been signed by more than 34,000 parents is starting to gain momentum across Hertfordshire. A total of 56 schools across St Albans and Harpenden have seen parents sign the pact to wait to give their child a smartphone until at least the end of year 9 when they're 14 years old. Overall, 3,783 parents across 317 schools have signed up to the pact in Hertfordshire. The petition was put together by grassroots movement Smartphone Free Childhood, who hope that the petition will push for a future of schools without smartphones. The National Pact currently sits at 57,756 children from 8,358 schools, with the number one spot held by Hertfordshire, followed by Surrey, South West London and then Hampshire in fourth. Smartphone Free Childhood states, "We're on a mission to change the cultural norm that children are given smartphones and challenge big tech's ever-increasing colonisation of childhood. It has three clear goals. One, growing the national conversation about the harms of smartphones for children. Two, empowering parents and schools to take the collective action and create change at local level. And three, putting pressure on government and tech companies to help protect children."
Lawyer inducted into Legal 500 Hall of Fame. The head of family law at a St Albans firm has been inducted into the Legal 500 2025 Hall of Fame. Marilyn Bell, partner at SA Law, is one of only 9 family lawyers in the South East to achieve this distinction. The Hall of Fame honours lawyers at the pinnacle of the profession, recognised by peers and clients for their long-term commitment to leading work. Ms. Bell became a partner and head of family law at SA Law in 2005 when the firm was established. She specialises in family law, including divorce and the resolution of complex financial disputes, as well as issues relating to children. She is a qualified mediator for both adults and children and a qualified collaborative lawyer. Ms. Bell said, "It's a great honour to join esteemed fellow professionals in the Legal 500 Hall of Fame, and I'm thrilled to receive the recognition. I'd like to thank my fellow family team colleagues and those in the wider firm who, along with support from excellent counsel in leading London chambers, enable me to deliver outstanding results for clients in the most complex and difficult situations." SA Law's family department has also been ranked in the top tier for the 8th consecutive year by the Legal 500.
Our next story is about an ITV drama which has taken over a pub for filming. More scenes for a new ITV drama have been captured in St Albans, with film crews taking over a pub last week. Filming for six-part police drama Code of Silence took place in the city last month when leading star Rose Ailing Ellis was spotted for scenes being captured at the Fade to Black coffee shop in the Quadrant. Now, crews have taken over the Garibaldi pub in Albert Street, with filming taking place last week. Filming starts at the Garibaldi on Monday for the ITV drama Code of Silence. Filming finishes Friday, read a post from the pub's landlady Caroline Beale last week. Apologies for disruption of opening hours, but it's the first time in 15 years we've had to amend opening hours. Thank you all for being so understanding and supportive. It's exciting and such a good thing for the pub. Ailing Ellis will be joined by Kieran Moore, Charlotte Ritchie and Andrew Buchan in the new drama, which according to ITV offers a fresh and distinctive perspective on the intersection of crime and communication. Code of Silence is told through the point of view of Alison Brooks, played by Ailing Ellis, a deaf canteen worker who is struggling to make ends meet, juggling two jobs, one in a police canteen and another in a local bar. Alison is pulled into a high-stakes police investigation when DS Ashley Francis, played by Charlotte Ritchie, asks that she use her lip-reading skills to monitor a dangerous criminal gang. As her interpretation of their covert conversations becomes central to the investigation, Alison is plunged into an exhilarating new world of police work, but her feelings become complicated when she finds herself drawn to one of the suspects, Liam Bain, played by Kieran Moore. Despite knowing the risks and the growing threat to her personal life, Alison can't let go. Ailing Ellis shot to fame as Frankie Lewis in EastEnders before becoming the first deaf contestant to compete on Strictly Come Dancing, winning the 2021 series of the show. She's also appeared on Casualty and was the first deaf presenter of a live sports event, hosting part of Channel 4's Paralympic coverage earlier this year. She was also awarded an MBE in the King's Birthday Honours for voluntary services to the deaf community.
Police advice after £15,000 worth of jewellery stolen in burglary. Jewellery worth £15,000 has been stolen during a burglary in St Albans, with police issuing advice on keeping treasured items safe. On Friday, October the 11th, a burglary in St Albans resulted in thousands of pounds worth of jewellery being stolen, with officers warning of increased criminal activity during celebrations such as Diwali. Detective Chief Inspector Luke Winnett from Hertfordshire Constabulary's Local Policing Command said, "Some families who have large collections of valuable jewellery, and in particular high-value gold, have been targeted by criminals in the past. Wearing lots of gold and jewels as you travel to weddings and religious festivals can draw unwanted attention from criminals, so we recommend keeping it hidden until you reach the venue. If you plan to attend an event, it is advisable to be discreet when wearing high-value jewellery items in public. Also, ensure that these items are securely stored when kept in the home, or consider keeping them somewhere else, like in a safety deposit box. Burglars tend to target houses that are empty, particularly if they are not very well secured. Taking steps to secure your home can be enough to deter many burglars. If you have made a significant investment in gold and jewellery, it makes sense to take all possible precautions to protect these items."
Power of play in healthcare. This week is Play in Healthcare Week, an annual celebration of play and its important role for babies, children and young people in healthcare settings. Rennygrove Peace Hospice Care is marking the week by shining a spotlight on its own play team and the work it does with children who are affected by a life-limiting illness or life-threatening condition. Karen is a play specialist at Rennygrove Peace. She explained, "Play is vitally important for all children. It allows children to explore the world around them, supports development and is lots of fun, allowing children and families to make special memories together. Play is an important part of childhood, which should not be lost for children who have a long-term health condition. Play in healthcare is particularly important as it can support a child to cope with their condition and treatments. Karen and her team use a range of specialist play techniques to bring the benefits of play to their young patients. The team has a big playroom at Grove House with a large cupboard full of toys, including arts, crafts and messy play, adapted and sensory toys, gaming consoles, as well as more traditional board and card games. Karen's colleague, Kelly, who is a play worker in the team, explained, "Play sessions vary according to each child's needs and what they like. Arts, crafts and messy play is popular, as are our sensory stories told using lights, sounds and textures. The play team at Rennie Grove Peace offers play in a variety of ways. Children who are living with a life-limiting illness or life-threatening condition may be offered one-to-one sessions at home. These can include siblings and the whole family. For other patients, one-to-one or small group sessions in the playroom at Grove House might be most suitable. During school holidays, the team organises group sessions for children and siblings to come together and enjoy things like music and interactive fun, as well as meeting other families. The team also offers a monthly group play session for the siblings of patients, as well as one-to-one sessions for siblings who have been bereaved. To find out more about the care offered by Rennie Grove Peace, visit renniegrovepeace.org.
Popular Pumpkin Festival returns to Activity Farm. Pumpkin pickers looking for a jolly good day out should head to Willow's Activity Farm this October for the farm's annual Pumpkin Festival. The 500-acre farm in Courses Road, London Colney, kicks off its autumn celebrations on Saturday, October the 19th, and Sunday the 20th, when the pumpkin patch opens for its first visitors of the year. It then reopens on Friday, October the 25th for half term and runs until Friday, November the 1st. Lissa Elster, Chief Executive at Willow's Activity Farm, said, "We wanted to open our pumpkin patch a little earlier this year to give families a chance to enjoy their pumpkins for a little longer in the run-up to Halloween. Tickets can be purchased in advance through the internet at their website willowsactivityfarm.com. The article is illustrated with two lovely photos of little children with pumpkins, perhaps from last year. There's a little fellow in a bright blue anorak with a huge green pumpkin, which is almost as big as he is. And a lovely little girl in a pink anorak with a tiny little orange gourd. Both seem to be having great fun and enjoying themselves."
And next, we're going to hear about another pub in the headlines this week, which is offering free private hire for the community. A beloved pub near St Albans has begun offering free private venue hire to give back to the community. The Hollybush at Potter's Crouch is giving customers the opportunity to use its space for free for weddings, funerals and parties after hosting them for more than 18 years. For landlord Vanessa Williams, the change to no fees was a long time in the making. And with 2024 its busiest ever year, there was no time like the present. Vanessa said, "I was born in the pub and always wanted to make it into the number one venue in Hearts. The cost of everything has become so colossal. And people want a deal. It would be nice to give back to the local community." The 43-year-old described the pub as a blank canvas for customers, as they only provide alcohol, allowing hosts to hire their own caterers and marquees if they wish to. For their regular punters, Vanessa ensured that the pub would still remain open for normal business hours, serving food and drink they know and love. "The community support has always meant the world to us, and we hope they'll join us in this new chapter for the Hollybush," the landlord added. One testimonial said, "A lovely pub run by a lovely owner, Vanessa and the team pulled out all the stops for our wedding. They went above and beyond to ensure we had the best day. Nothing was too much trouble, and we will be forever grateful to this wonderful pub. The new deal has already proved a hit, with over 20 bookings since it was announced earlier this year. Customers are required to pay a £500 deposit, which is refundable, and must host at least 50 guests to qualify for the deal.
This is an article about St Albans City Football Club, written full of passion. And the heading is Relief and Delight for quote-unquote Warriors. A goal 16 minutes from time was enough to finally give St Albans City a National League South victory. Ken Charles struck the decisive blow in the 1-0 win at Hampden and Richmond Borough, bringing success to beleaguered manager David Noble's side at the 11th time of asking. It was enough to lift them off the bottom and above Weymouth and Aveley, and there was a barbed reply to his critics after big celebrations on the final whistle. "There was a bit of relief there," said Noble. "People will tell you that I'm not a passionate man, but you ask anyone who knows me or any of those players or anyone associated with this club who takes the time to come and speak to me. People can say whatever they like. I don't take advice from people who I wouldn't ask an opinion from. People like winning football matches, whether you're playing in them or watching them, or you've got some links to the club. Everyone who watches their team play football wants to win. I'm no different, and of course, it's great to get that win, and the boys more than anyone, they deserve it. It's not so much about the formation and the tactics at time, it's about the heart and the desire and how much you want to go and win. We showed that at Hampden, and we were certainly on our mettle. We defended our goal with our lives. We've been guilty of giving teams goals in the past, but we didn't do that here. The boys at the back deserve credit, but that goes for all 11 men on that pitch. You defend together and you attack together, and in both boxes this season we've been lacking. Here we got a clean sheet at one end. People were throwing their bodies on the line. I remember a Josh Castiglione block that looked a certain goal, or a certain shot on goal. Dion Woodman was defending crosses. Joe Partington was strapped up giving a Terry Butcher-esque performance. I could mention loads of people. Sean Jeffers' play for Ken's goal, McKeezay's work rate. It was a real Warriors performance from St Albans, one that I'm proud of. Next up is Welling United, the side currently occupying one position outside of the relegation places. Noble said, "Every game is a big game and Welling will be no different. We haven't had an easy game this season, and as I always say, the league gets better every year. I'm a 9-year veteran at St Albans, and from the minute I walked in, the league and everything around it is night and day to what it was then. This is the benchmark, maybe not the benchmark for our football, but Hampden and Richmond are a good team. They pass the ball well. They may be lacking a little bit, dominating games but not putting them to bed. We've been dominant in a lot of our games, but if you're not clinical or you don't have people making the difference in the final third, you'll get punished. Football is a game of margins. It's decided in both boxes. It was really nice to see a solid display." And there's a couple of pictures with this article. One is of Ken Charles, who grabbed the winner for City, after good play from Sean Jeffers, who is pictured on the second picture with a couple of other players in the team.
Vintage Lifestyle Shop closes after 4 years. A shop in Wheatamstead's High Street has shut its doors for the final time after 4 years. The appropriately named Number 8 Lifestyle Shop has been at 8 High Street since 2020, following 3 years at a site in Harpenden. The shop sold flowers and a range of interior products, from furniture to mirrors and frames. But Number 8 has now closed, with owner Catherine Jones citing the simple fact that the business was no longer financially viable. She said, "I would like to thank everyone who has supported me and my shop over the years. I would encourage everyone to support our independent businesses because retail is bloody tough and they really do need our help. I've seen many businesses closing this year and know a lot of my fellow business owners may not even make it to Christmas, so it really is important." The number 8 business could remain in some form, likely online, but Catherine's focus is now on landing a new, secure job. Catherine has won a Muddy Stilettos Award for her work as a florist and has been shortlisted for other awards. You can find out more about the next steps for the business by visiting their website, number8lifestyle.co.uk.
Care is needed to help a child in an emergency. An emergency foster care scheme in Hertfordshire has helped more than 100 children since it launched in 2022. But more foster carers are needed in the county to provide this vital emergency care and support to children and young people in their moment of need. When a child or children need to leave their family home or care provider at short notice, they need someone to look after them until the best and most appropriate longer-term care can be found. Councillor Fiona Thompson, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Young People and Families, said, "Our emergency foster carers provide the most important service to our children in need, and we cannot underestimate the value of what they do. They give care, support and a warm welcome to the children at the time they need it most. We urgently need more people to join our team and provide emergency care. Emergency foster carers must be aged over 21 and have a spare room. They also need to be available at very short notice, at night and on weekends, as well as during the day. To find out more, contact the fostering recruitment team."
Fly tipper found guilty of dumping waste in Hertfordshire. A fly tipper has been found guilty of illegally dumping waste in the latest successful prosecution brought by Hartsmere Borough Council. Wembley man Florin Morar was found guilty of 7 offences related to fly tipping, including duty of care for the disposal of controlled waste and for being an unlicensed waste carrier, at St Albans Magistrates Court on Thursday, October the 10th. He had left waste in Holmes Hill Lane, Boreham Wood on February the 7th of this year, and evidence collected from the scene led council officers to an address. The case was investigated by Hartsmere's environmental health team and prosecuted at court by a prosecutor from the council's legal team. Morar, 40, of Harrow Road, Wembley, was ordered to pay £1,600 to the council in costs, £950 in compensation to Hertfordshire County Council, £114 victim surcharge, and a community order of 200 hours of unpaid work. Councillor Paul Richards, portfolio holder for environmental sustainability and net zero and public health, said, "I am really pleased with the outcome of this court hearing. My thanks go to the environmental health team for their excellent work and our legal team for bringing a successful prosecution. This case, in addition to previous successful convictions, sends a clear message that it is wholly unacceptable to knowingly harm the environment with no consideration for the impact on the wider community. Fly tipping wastes our limited public resources, blights our countryside and urban public spaces, and in some cases the clearance costs and inconvenience to private landowners. This behaviour diverts valuable resources from the delivery of frontline services at a time when council services are under ever-increasing pressure from a growing population, more customers, more waste, and challenges recruiting staff. with so many great recycling centres and household tips around, there is no excuse for it.
Campaign to raise money for cancer treatment. West Hearts Hospital's charity is hoping to raise £200,000. The Hearts Advertiser is backing an appeal to raise £200,000 for new breast cancer treatment equipment. West Hearts Hospital's charity, the official charity for West Hearts Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust, has launched the appeal to fund two Savvy Scout surgical guidance systems. The state-of-the-art equipment uses radar technology to detect and precisely pinpoint the location of cancer within a distance of 1 millimetre, allowing for the targeted removal of cancerous tissue. The equipment will be based at St Albans City Hospital, where patients from across West Hearts, including the St Albans area, are treated. To help raise money for the appeal, a team from West Hearts Hospital's Breast Clinic, led by consultant breast surgeon Kelvin Chong, will be taking on an 11-mile trek on Sunday, November the 3rd. The group will be taking part in the Titty Trail, a fundraising walk from Watford General Hospital to St Albans City Hospital's Breast Unit, following the scenic Abbey Line Trail from Watford Junction to St Albans Abbey. Mr Chong said breast cancer patients need to receive the best treatments they can get. Raising money for the Savvy Scout surgical guidance systems for the breast unit here will be worth every penny, as it will transform the surgical experience for so many women in our community. Breast care nurse Sean Cox added, "We're always striving to improve treatment and the care we offer our breast cancer patients, so this is a great opportunity to do just that. At the same time, we'll have some fun walking together." The campaign is backed by both the Hearts Advertiser and its sister title, the Watford Observer.
Scammer poses as traffic warden and climbs into woman's car. A scammer posing as a traffic warden climbed into a woman's car in Hemel Hempstead and demanded she hand over her bank card. The victim was parked on Hillfield Road close to the hospital when a man in his high-vis vest got into her car and told her he was a traffic warden. He physically intimidated the woman, claiming she would be fined if she did not hand over her bank card. He then left the car with the card, and later that day the victim was contacted by her bank, who informed her that an attempt to withdraw £4,000 had been stopped. The man has been described as in his 40s, black and of medium build, around 6 foot and clean-shaven. Police are warning drivers of the scam and are appealing for help to identify the perpetrator. Fraud triage manager Julian Griffiths from the Serious Fraud and Cyber Unit said, "This incident must have been very distressing for the victim, who not only had their card taken, but must have felt physically intimidated by the man climbing into the car." There doesn't seem to have been any other similar incidents reported in the county to date, but I would advise drivers to be cautious and lock their vehicles if they're parked up. No official or company representative should ever ask you to hand over cash or bank cards at the roadside. If you are asked to do so, ask them to send a penalty notice through the post and do not provide them with any personal information. If they remain insistent, call police on 101.
And finally, a piece by St Albans MP Daisy Cooper, who has said that there should be no more bonuses for water bosses until sewage stops being dumped in our rivers, chalk streams and seas. If there's one issue that has united our nation in universal condemnation, it is the dumping of raw sewage into our rivers, chalk streams and seas. Under the Conservatives, this environmental catastrophe was left to fester. Now, the Labour government has brought forward a water bill with the aim of tackling the issue. But in truth, it's only a job half done. The dumping of raw sewage in our waterways is bad enough, but the scandal is made so much worse by the fact that water company bosses have been pocketing millions of pounds in bonuses whilst doing it. To tackle this, the government's new water bill has a half-baked proposal. Water bosses' bonuses will be determined according to a series of tests to be established by the water regulator Ofwat. But here's the rub. The regulator is a busted flush. Just this week, a new Freedom of Information request by my Liberal Democrat colleagues reveals that 3 years after Ofwat started its investigation into sewage dumping, it hasn't issued a single fine, not one. So if the regulator can't be trusted to issue fines for sewage dumping, it surely can't be trusted to ban water bosses' bonuses either. And this matters because these bonuses are big. Analysis of Company House records, again by we Liberal Democrats, has found that water company executives have made £35 million in bonuses since 2021. In other sectors, such handsome payments are given to reward success, but in the water industry, they are literally rewarding failure. Thames Water is no exception. I met the company recently at their Markiate water treatment plant and challenged them to list their priority areas for improving the sewer system. But can you believe it? Our area, which includes the ecological gem, which is the River Ver, didn't even feature. A wishy-washy bonus setting process just isn't going to cut it. That's why we Liberal Democrats are trying to strengthen the law to make it clear cut. No more bonuses until the sewage dumping stops. To get in touch with Daisy Cooper, you can email her at daisy.cooper.mp@parliament.uk or call her parliamentary office in the House of Commons, which is London SW1A OAA on 020 7219 8568. And you can also get in touch by calling her constituency office in St Albans, and that's on 01727 519900.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, October 19th, in your ultimate British group, as part of the National Album Day, Mark Goodyear counts down listeners' favourite British groups on Radio 2 at 1 o'clock. There's vintage comedy from the Morecambe and Wise show from 1966 on Radio 4 Extra at 2.30 in the afternoon or 8.30 at night. In the Mandy Rice Davies tapes, Kirsty Walk presents recently unearthed recordings of the late actress and model who's one of the key figures at the centre of the 1963 Profumo affair. Radio 4 for this Saturday evening, 8 o'clock. Sunday, October 20th. And the castaway in Desert Island Discs is folk singer Shirley Collins on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. Followed by The Earth Below, in which Joe Marchant joins diver Phil Short in the depths of the Wookie Hole Caves in Somerset. Radio 4 for this, 10:45 in the morning. Also on Sunday, the quiz contest Brain of Britain continues on Radio 4 at 4:30. While the BBC Young Musician of the Year competition reaches its climax, the grand final, between three brilliant soloists, Radio 3, Sunday afternoon, 5:25. Venice Preserved, it is an adaptation of the 1682 thriller by the Restoration dramatist Thomas Otway. The government of Venice is corrupt and self-serving as rebels prepare for revolution. One of them is caught between love and ideology. Radio 3, Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Lastly, for the weekend, from our own correspondent on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. On to programmes then that are broadcast at the same time every day, Monday to Friday. Same time, same radio station, all week, Monday to Friday. Fungi, the Fifth Kingdom. Mycologists studying fungi at the Royal Botanical Gardens reveal their findings. Radio 4 Extra, all week, 9:30 a.m. Book of the Week. On Freedom by historian Timothy Snyder, who explores how the concept of freedom has been misunderstood and is leading society into a crisis. Radio 4, all week, Monday to Friday, 11:45. I'm Here, I Think, Where Are You? Features actor Timothy West's letters to his wife Prunella Scales over a period of 30 years. Radio 4 Extra, 1:30 in the afternoon or 7:30 p.m. Surviving Politics with Michael Gove, a new series in which the former Conservative MP reflects on his experiences and talks with politicians from different parties about the strength and skills needed to survive. Radio 4 all week, 1:45 p.m. Composer of the week is Margaret Bonds, 1913 to 1972. Radio 3, 4 o'clock, Monday to Friday. Writing Australia presents five essays by Australians on the theme of place and belonging, recorded in front of an audience at the Sydney Theatre Company. Radio 4 all week at 9:45 p.m. While Book of Bedtime continues the reading of The Ministry of Time by Kellyanne Bradley, Radio 4 each day this week at 10:45 at night. On to programmes then that we can listen to through the week, starting with Monday, October 21st. And the drama is a return of the domestic comedy Jack and Millie in the first of a four-part series on Radio 4 on Monday at 2:15 in the afternoon. Lucy Worsley's series Lady Swindlers continues with the story of Violet Charlesworth, fake heiress, who disappeared in 1909. It's a story of prodigious spending habits, looming debts, an apparently fatal car crash that left no body and a surprisingly unconcerned family. Radio 4, 3:30 p.m. And lastly, on Monday, the last in the current series, Just a Minute, on Radio 4 at 6:30. Tuesday, October 22nd, in the series Young Again, comedian, writer and actor Miranda Hart talks about significant moments in her life and the advice she would give to her younger self. Radio 4, Tuesday morning, 9 o'clock. Bertie and the Crime of Passion is a dramatisation of Peter Lovesey's 1990 historical whodunit, the last of three novels involving Albert Edward, Prince of Wales. The Royal Sleuth tries to find out who's behind a fatal shooting at the Moulin Rouge in a four-part story on Radio 4 Extra. It's on all week, 11 a.m. in the morning or 5 p.m. at night, Tuesday to Friday. Back to Tuesday, October 22nd, and in The Hazard of the Die, after being diagnosed with motor neurone disease, actor Michael Patrick is offered a chance to join an experimental drug trial that could offer a promising new treatment. Radio 4, 4 p.m. Tuesday, Sir In Touch with Peter White, presenting his regular programme with news and features for the blind and partially sighted on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. And for jazz fans, Jamie Cullen presents The Jazz Show on Radio 2 at 9. Wednesday, October 23rd, the Missing Hancocks continue with a re-recording of the lost 1955 Hancocks half hour, The Matador, starring Kevin McNally. Radio 4 Extra for this at 7:30 in the morning if you fancy a giggle to wake up to, 12:30 at lunchtime or 6:30 at night. Choral Evensong comes from the chapel of St John's College in Cambridge on Radio 3 at 3. The Moral Maze starts a new series where presenter Michael Burke and his guests will debate the moral aspects of a topical issue. Radio 4 at 8 p.m. Wednesday sees Mark Radcliffe present The Folk Show on Radio 2 at 9. And The Conflict Middle East continues with journalists from across the BBC reflecting on events in the region just over a year on from the Hamas attack on Israel. Radio 4, 9:30 p.m. Thursday, October 24th. In Ramblings, Alan Titchmarsh takes Claire Balding for a favourite walk across Tennyson Down on the Isle of Wight, taking in views of the famous needles. Radio 4, 3 o'clock. The series Rethink looks at our creaking care system, with successive governments having recognised it's a problem, but without being able to fix it. The programme looks at the arguments for a national care service to match the National Health Service. Radio 4, Thursday at 4. Henry Cyril Paget, Lord of the Dance, is a profile of the 5th Marquess of Anglesey, who acquired his reputation as the Dancing Marquess through his extravagant theatre spectacles and died bankrupt. Radio 4 Extra at 4:30 p.m. on Thursday. And Friday, October 25th, the first of two programmes looking at the US presidential election. Battle for the Planet considers the implications for the planet of the possible outcome on Radio 4 just after midday. In the series Nature Bang, Lazy Ants and the Power of Doing Nothing learns the natural power of doing nothing from the animal kingdom and finds out why humans are so bad at it. Radio 4, 2:45 on Friday. Wakefield is a dramatisation of Nathaniel Hawthorne's 1837 short story, in which a bored and dull man temporarily leaves home to observe, from the flat opposite, the effect on his wife. Radio 4 Extra at 3 in the afternoon on Friday. Well, finally, series Free Thinking, looking at American politics in the light of the influence of American culture on the UK and the wider world. Is it as powerful as ever, or is it in retreat? Friday rounds off with Radio 4's Free Thinking at 9 p.m. That's it. Thank you to Wendy for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Now for the audio described television programmes for the week starting Saturday 19th of October, ending Friday 25th of October 2024, compiled by John B and read by Diane. So, let's start with Saturday. Recipes including lamb sloppy joes are featured in Nadia's Cook Once, Eat Twice on BBC One at 11:30 this morning. Bargain Hunt is in Nottinghamshire at 1:15 p.m. on BBC One. Rick Stein has another food story to tell you at 12 noon on BBC Two. The intergalactic law enforcers tackle their biggest threat, a mole in the Men in Black organisation. Men in Black International is the early evening film on Channel 4 at 5:10. The couples present their routines in the hope of having a place in next week's Halloween special, Strictly Come Dancing, at 6:25 tonight on BBC One. The results will be announced tomorrow at 7:20 p.m. Giles Brandreth, Cliff Parisi and Perry Shakes Drayton say what they see and try to win £50,000 for their charity in Celebrity Catchphrase on ITV1 at 7:15 p.m. The Yorkshire Line, that was closely intertwined with the fortunes of the railway financier George Hudson, is the feature of Abandoned Railways from Above tonight on Channel 4 at 7:15 p.m. What happened when the British wartime government, led by Winston Churchill, allowed the racially segregated US Army to bring its own apartheid-style military to Britain? Find out in Churchill, Britain's Secret Apartheid, on Channel 4 at 8:20 p.m. Troy makes a risky decision to evade the police, who know he has critical information about his mother's disappearance. Apples Never Fall continues on BBC One at 9:20. On to Sunday the 20th. Key players in our political world are interviewed in Sunday with Laura Koonsberg on BBC One at 9 a.m. An antiques fair at the National Botanic Garden of Wales is the location for Bargain Hunt on at 12:30 on BBC One. There are four episodes of The Simpsons on Channel 4 between 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. Max the dog becomes anxious when his owner has a child, but grizzled farm dog Rooster helps him overcome his fears. Find out how they get on in The Secret Life of Pets, the afternoon film on BBC One at 3:35 p.m. The couple leaving the dance floor will be revealed in Strictly Come Dancing, The Results, on BBC One at 7:20 p.m. With the trial fast approaching, Sam struggles to deal with Justin's volatile personality as well as his own insomnia. Show trial continues on BBC One at 9. The duo are off to the North Norfolk coast, where they fish in the most challenging conditions they've ever endured. Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. The final choice at 9 tonight is a crime drama. The deaths of an innocent nurse and the head of a notorious gang point towards increasing tensions between rival Birmingham crime families. D.I. Rachida Ray is called in to investigate. D.I. Ray is on ITV1 at 9. Part 2 is on at the same time tomorrow. Now, programmes that are on at the same time and the same channel each weekday. All the following programmes are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15, Bargain Hunt at 12:15, Doctors at 2 p.m. but not on Friday, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. And now for the other channels. Tigers About the House on BBC Two at 3:15 from Monday to Wednesday. Heartbeat, two episodes starting at 5:50 and 6:55 on ITV3. Strictly It Takes Two on BBC Two at 6:30. It's not audio described, but if you've been following Strictly, it should make sense. All the soaps are in their usual places at the usual times. Looking now at Monday, 21st of October. There are two quiz programmes that will interest you. They're not audio described, but you should understand what's going on. Both programmes are on BBC Two, Mastermind at 7:30 and then University Challenge at 8:30. Jamie Oliver tantalises our taste buds with sesame and miso salmon, made in minutes but packed full of flavour. He also demonstrates a speedy no-cook pasta sauce. Jamie, Fast and Simple, on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Sharing more tips to improve health, Michael explores the cognitive benefits of learning new skills. Ali gets to grip with activities including dancing, pottery and learning a language. Michael Mosley, Just One Thing, on BBC One at 8:30 p.m. Lots of choices at 9. Professor Brian Cox looks at the solar system's most tempestuous planets and their weird weather in Solar System on BBC Two at 9. A sinister link between the Chapmans and the Mechanis is uncovered when a photo is found on Rav's laptop. The second part of D.I. Ray on ITV One at 9 p.m. Barry sets off to see Morris to discuss the future in part 3 of Mr. Loverman on BBC One at 9. Part 4 follows at 9:30 p.m. Finally, for Monday, Alma joins a stand-up course and her great-grandmother dies in Alma's Not Normal on BBC Two at 10 p.m. Now for Tuesday, 22nd October. Nadia Hussain creates a savoury peanut chicken tray bake that has guaranteed leftovers that can be spun into a bowl of steaming noodles. How she does it is revealed in the final part of Nadia's Cook Once, Eat Twice on BBC Two at 7:30 p.m. Three remaining hopefuls face their final and biggest challenge as they create full collections and showcase their designs in a star-studded catwalk event. The winner will be revealed in M&S Dress the Nation on ITV One at 8 p.m. Back in the tent, it's Pastry Week and the showstopper puts their shoe skills to the test as they create a Paris Brest complete with a freestanding podium. The Great British Bake Off, of course, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. I'll be watching to find out what a Paris Brest is. The third murder victim is discovered in Part 3 of D.I. Ray on ITV One at 9 p.m. As Billy struggles to cope, Steve discovers what he's willing to do to protect his son in Waterloo Road at 9 p.m. on BBC One. In the penultimate challenge, Ed sends the kids out into the jungle unaccompanied. 14-year-old Roka steps up to help the younger children, but one father loses his cool when the youngsters aren't back in camp after dark. Into the Jungle with Ed Stafford is on Channel 4 at 9:15 p.m. Now on to Wednesday, 23rd October. How do the modern earbud-style headphones work? And how do they cancel out external noise? Hannah Fry visits the Bose factory to find out. Headphones, the secret genius of modern life, is on BBC Two at 7 tonight. A knife-sharpening barrow, a stuffed toy dog, a special guitar and a braille typewriter are in need of help from the repair shop tonight at 8 on BBC One. HMS Queen Elizabeth enters the Eastern Mediterranean, but Russian warships and jet fighters are diverted from the Black Sea to intercept the vessel in a wave of aggression. The warship, Tour of Duty, is on BBC Two at 8. The team are sent to investigate a suspicious death of a headmaster, but bad memories of John's own school days start to resurface. Then he reconnects with his old mentor, the man who taught him the joy of puzzles. Part 5 of Ludwig is on BBC One at 9 p.m. Having recently lost parents, actors James Nesbitt and Sarah Parrish are on a quest to find close family connections. DNA Journey is on ITV One at 9. The Radio Times choice for today is a look at national parks across the world. Episode 1 looks at the Cairngorms National Park in Scotland and the mixture of the natural beauty of northeastern Scotland and a traditional Highland Games attended by King Charles. National Parks from Above is on More4 at 9 p.m. On to Thursday, 24th of October. Rick discovers how Italian burrata and Chinese dim sum are made, and the Englishness of the full English breakfast in Rick Stein's Food Stories is on BBC Two at 7 p.m. tonight. The Rob Rinder and Monica Galletti work at the Stanglwort Hotel in the Austrian Alps, which has world-class boxing and tennis facilities and a stable of elegant Bizian horses. Amazing Hotels, Life Behind the Lobby is on BBC Two at 8 p.m. Fiona and Philip investigate the origins of a painting hanging in a church in Port Glasgow. Art historian Ian MacDonald thought it was something special, so after he died, his wife Marjorie took up his quest. Can Fiona and Philip find the truth in Fake or Fortune on BBC One at 8 p.m. Having watched Bake Off on Tuesday, Would You Like Another Portion? Joe Brand is joined by Alexander Armstrong, Natalie Cassidy and AJ Odudu to chew over Pastry Week. The Great British Bake Off, An Extra Slice, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. James starts to behave out of character while examining Tricky, and Siegfried and Tristan renegotiate their relationship. The final part of All Creatures Great and Small is at 9 on Channel 5. By 1936, one of the occupants of the Berlin apartment block has joined the SS, while in London, life is relatively normal. But as the Second World War breaks out, Italian resident Claudio Foglia is declared an enemy alien. A House Through Time, Two Cities at War is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. And finally, Friday, 25th of October. A contestant in a beauty pageant meets an untimely end in The Sister Boniface Mysteries on BBC One at 2 p.m. ITV One is showing football, England versus Germany. It's not audio described, but if you are interested, the commentary should help you make sense of the game. International football on ITV One from 7 until 10 tonight. Across the UK, hundreds of volunteer groups support the emergency services. This programme follows the Search and Rescue Dog Association, Ireland North and its specially trained canines. Pets Saving Lives, Our Lives is on BBC One at 7:30 p.m. Mrs McCarthy's goddaughter is missing in tonight's episode of Father Brown on the You and Drama channel at 8 p.m. Fisherman Darren is just one of two men operating out of Staithes, where he searches for lobster and crab in the North Sea. Yorkshire by the Sea is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. A wedding is due to take place at Button House, but an unexpected snowfall disrupts everyone's plans. Ghosts is on BBC One at 8:30 p.m. Oscar winner Al Pacino looks back at his life and career. He shares stories behind some of his most celebrated films. Al Pacino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is on BBC Two at 9 p.m. Wiki is called to a lighthouse on a remote island where the keeper's mate has been lost at sea. Looking forward to getting away from it all, Wiki soon realises all is not as it seems. The Cleaner starts at 9:30 p.m. on BBC One. That's everything. I do hope you find something of interest this week.
TNF Soundings. Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10t, and the 10t is the digit 1, the digit 0 and the letter t. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Jeff, and here he is.
Hello everyone, welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 4. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. is great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If the exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either stood up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you to do all this exercise safely. You're responsible for monitoring how you feel throughout the sessions. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be ideal if you could use a hard chair that you could sit upright in, which could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. With your feet flat on the floor, if you are stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders, and stand up nice and tall. Take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor, keep your back straight, relax your shoulders, and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out, in and out. So first we have lift and lower. Please remember all the movements can be achieved whether you're sitting or standing. Raise both your arms straight up together with your palms up. Now raise up on your toes and lower your toes back down, bringing your arms down at the same time. Then bend over gently without straining your back. And with your arms and legs straight if standing, or feet flat on the floor with your knees bent if sitting, swing your arms from side to side twice and come back up to stand or sit straight and take a breath. Now we are going to repeat that routine. So raise both arms straight up together with palms up. Raise up on your toes, then lower your toes back down, bringing your arms down at the same time. Then lean over gently, keeping legs and arms straight if standing, and feet flat on the floor, knees bent if sitting. And swing both arms from left to right twice, and return to a standing position. So keep going, lifting up and down, then bending over and swinging. Great work, everyone. This is a nice one just to get all those muscles nice and warm. Next up is straight out. So for this one, if you're standing, you might want to make sure you are near a chair for balance. And whether you're sitting or standing, please do not raise legs higher than hip level. Keeping your left leg soft, bend your right leg and lift your knee level to hip height. Now gently stretch out your right leg as straight as you can without straining. Then bend knee again and return your foot to the start position. Now do the same on the other side, bending your left leg and lifting your knee level to hip height. Now stretch out your left leg as straight as you can without straining. Then bend your knee again and return to the start position. Keep doing this on alternate legs, lifting knee up to hip height, stretching leg out and returning to the start position. This is a great one for working out those legs. The next one is called crunch for core. Bend your right arm and bring your right elbow towards your left knee, lifting the knee to reach your elbow. You should feel a nice crunch on your core, then release back down. If you are sitting and find it harder to lift the knee, bend your back and lean into it, or if that is uncomfortable, then you can tap your knee with your hand instead. Now do the same on the other side. So bend your left arm and bring your left elbow towards your right knee, or tap your hand on your knee and release. Whichever variation you are doing, you should feel that crunch in your core. Keep going on alternate sides. Just a few more now. This is a great workout for your tummy. We should all be feeling nice and warm now. The next one is called Out and Over. If you are standing, I recommend that you are near something that you can hold on to for balance, like a chair. So raise your right leg out straight in front of you. Then keep your leg straight and move it gently to the right side until you feel that nice stretch on the top of your leg. Then move it back to the centre and back down. Repeat this on the same leg. So raise your right leg out straight in front of you. Then keep your leg straight and gently move it to the right side, feeling that nice stretch. Then move your leg back down to the centre and back down. So raise straight out, to the side, back straight and back down. And again, do that a couple of more times. This is really good for your hips, tummy and thighs. Now we are going to do the same thing on your left leg. So you raise your left leg out and straight, then gently move it to the left side until you feel that nice stretch in the top of your leg. Then move it back to the centre and back down. Remembering to keep that leg straight. So up, to the side, back straight and back down. A couple more times on this side now. Great work, everyone. Next up is full circle. Stand up nice and tall and keep your back straight. Raise both arms straight up above your head, then sweep them round to the right, making one big circle all the way back up to the top. And keep swinging one big circle to the right, just a couple more in this direction. Now lower your hands, relax your shoulders and take a breath. Good work. Now we're going to do exactly the same, but in the opposite direction. So keep making those nice big circles. It's a great workout for your shoulders, this one. Now we have push up to moon. So keep your legs nice and soft. And if you're sitting, keep your feet nice and firmly on the ground. Bend your arms so both hands are at chest height. Then push both your hands together up into the air to your right, like you're pushing up on the moon. Then sweep your hands back down in front of your tummy and to the left, pushing both your hands up into the air again on your left. And now keep going. So just making a nice big U with your hands, pushing up the moon on either side. Just a couple more now. Really nice movement, this one. Next up is Slowly Does It. These are slightly different if you're sitting or standing. So if you're standing, keep your back straight, bend your knees slightly to your halfway point and hold. Then bend your knees all the way down to your lowest point and hold. And then straighten up your legs again. Remember to keep your feet facing forward and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So if you're just moving halfway, holding, moving down to your lowest point, holding, then coming back up, keep going. If you are sitting, just straighten out your right leg in front of you and hold briefly, feeling that nice stretch down your leg. Then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you're also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering, keep your back straight. So for those standing, bending knees down to your halfway point and hold. Then down to your lowest point, then hold, and then up. And sitting, raising your alternate legs and holding briefly. Good job, everyone. Next up is swing back. If you are standing, keep your legs straight. If you are sitting, keep your feet flat on the floor. Bend your arms so both hands are at chest height. Then straighten out your right arm and gently swing it back so you feel a nice rotation in your back. Looking towards your right hand, just take it as far as you feel comfortable. Then return to the centre and straighten out your left arm and gently swing it back, looking towards your left side. And repeat. keep your feet and hips facing forward. So you're just moving side to side, swinging your arms back nice and gently, feeling your back rotate as you move side to side. Just a couple more now. This is a great one for trunk rotation. Our last exercise today is Strike of the Cobra, a wee bit of martial arts. So if you're standing or sitting, keep your back straight and maintain a good stance. Clench your fists at chest height like you're a boxer. Then with your right hand, punch arms straight out and return. Then punch upwards towards the left-hand corner of the ceiling so your arm crosses over your body and return. Now do the same with the left hand. So punching straight forward, then punching upwards across the body towards the right, and keep going. Really think about how your muscles are responding here, making the punches slow and controlled. Just a couple more now. Good job. Now we really should be feeling warm. If you're a little out of breath, that's a good thing. Means you've been working. If you're not a little out of breath, can you work a little harder next time? Anyway, nearly finished. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and a cool down. So we're going to start with a hamstring stretch. So step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean forward gently. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return a stood up position and swap your legs. So this time step forward with your left foot, placing your foot in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, feeling that nice long stretch. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you are hugging a tree, directly in front of you. And your arms, they form a nice circle in front of you. And then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And return to that nice relaxed posture that we had at the beginning. Brilliant. So that was all the exercises. We hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shake it out. So just shake those arms and hands, then legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today, just 3 times a week, can have great health benefits. It's fun, and you'll simply feel better. So keep going. 10 today is a Big Lottery and Sport England funded project. Thank you for listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is David, and I have some news of historical events that took place in this week, the 20th to the 26th October, in the past. On the 20th of October 1968, 21-year-old Oregonian Dick Fosbury won gold and set an Olympic record when he high-jumped 7 feet 4 and 1 quarter inches at the Mexico City Games. It was the first American victory in the event since 1956. It was also the international debut of Fosbury's unique jumping style, known as the Fosbury Flop. The flop, according to one journalist, looked like a guy falling off the back of a truck. Instead of the traditional scissors or straddle-style forward kick over the bar, it featured a mid-air rotation, so that the jumper landed back of the head first on the mat. Fosbury described it this way: "I take off on my right or outside foot rather than my left foot. Then I turn my back to the bar, arch my back over the bar, and then kick my legs out to clear the bar." It looked odd, but it worked better than any other technique. The advantage, he said, from a physics standpoint is it allows the jumper to run at the bar with more speed, and with the arch in your back you could actually clear the bar and keep your centre of gravity at or below the bar, so it was much more efficient. Within a decade, almost every elite high jumper was doing it Fosbury's way. And then the 21st of October 1966. That morning, October the 21st 1966, a landslide of coal waste crashed into Aberfan, a small Welsh mining village, killing 116 children and 28 adults. The accident left just 5 survivors and wiped out half the town's youth. The Aberfan disaster became one of the UK's worst coal mining accidents. The landslide sent 140,000 cubic yards of coal waste in a tidal wave 40 feet high, hurtling down the mountainside where Merthyr Fell Colliery stood, destroying farmhouses, cottages, houses and part of the neighbouring county secondary school. The avalanche is thought to have been the result of shoddy construction and the build-up of water in one of the colliery's spoil tips. Years before the incident, Aberfan's town council contacted the National Coal Board to express concerns over the spoil tips following a non-lethal accident on the colliery, but no action was taken to address the issue at the time. Then 22nd of October 1797. The first parachute jump of note was made by André-Jacques Gamarin from a hydrogen balloon 3,200 feet above Paris. Leonardo da Vinci had conceived the idea of the parachute in his writings, but André-Jacques Gamarin was the first to design and test parachutes capable of slowing a man's fall from a high altitude. Gamarin first conceived the possibility of using air resistance to slow an individual's fall from a high altitude while a prisoner during the French Revolution. Although he never employed a parachute to escape from the high ramparts of the Hungarian prison where he spent 3 years, Gamarin never lost interest in the concept of the parachute. In 1797, he completed his first parachute, a canopy 23 feet in diameter and attached to a basket with suspension lines. On October the 22nd, Gamarin attached the parachute to a hydrogen balloon and ascended to an altitude of 3,200 feet. He then clambered into the basket and severed the parachute from the balloon. As he failed to include an air vent at the top of the prototype, Gamarin oscillated wildly in his descent, but he landed shaken but unhurt half a mile from the balloon's takeoff site. He died in a balloon accident in 1823 while preparing to test a new parachute. And then on the 23rd of October 1958, Dr. Zhivago, Boris Pasternak's romantic novel set against the backdrop of the Russian Revolution, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. The book was banned in the Soviet Union, and the Soviet government forced the author to renounce the honour. Pasternak was born in Russia in 1890, and by the time of the Russian Revolution was a well-known avant-garde poet. His work fell into disfavour during the 1920s and the 1930s, as the communist regime of Joseph Stalin imposed strict censorship on Russian art and literature. During this time, in 1956, he completed the book that would make him a worldwide name. Dr. Zhivago was an epic love story set during the tumult of the Russian Revolution and World War I. The book infuriated the Soviet officials, particularly Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev. The Soviets argued that the book romanticised the pre-revolution Russian upper class and degraded the peasants and workers who fought against the Tsarist's regime. The official Soviet press refused to publish the book, and Pasternak found himself the target of unrelenting criticisms. Admirers of Pasternak's work, however, began secretly to smuggle the manuscript out of Russia piece by piece. By 1958, the book began to appear in numerous translations around the world. Pasternak died in May 1960, but Dr. Zhivago refused to die with him. In 1965, it was made into a hit movie starring Omar Sharif as the title character. On the 24th of October 2003, the supersonic Concorde jet made its last commercial flight, travelling at twice the speed of sound from New York City's John F. Kennedy International Airport to London's Heathrow Airport on October the 24th, 2003. The British Airways jet carried 100 passengers, including actress Joan Collins, model Christie Brinkley, and an Ohio couple who reportedly paid $60,000 on eBay for two tickets. A large crowd of spectators greeted the plane's arrival in London, which coincided with two other final Concorde flights from Edinburgh and the Bay of Biscay. The Concorde, which was developed jointly by the British and French governments, had begun commercial service in January 1976. A significant achievement in aviation technology and design, the sleek, delta-winged planes could make the trip from New York to London in around 3.5 hours, travelling at 1,350 miles per hour. The Concorde became a symbol of speed and luxury, although it was not without its problems. Citing rising operation costs and reduced ticket sales, British Airways retired its Concorde fleet in October 2003. On the 25th of October 1854, in an event alternately described as one of the most heroic or disastrous episodes in British military history, Lord James Cardigan leads a charge of the Light Brigade Cavalry against well-defended Russian artillery during the Crimean War. The British were winning the Battle of Balaclava when Cardigan received his order to attack the Russians. His cavalry gallantly charged down the valley and were decimated by the heavy Russian guns, suffering 40% casualties. It was later revealed that the order was the result of confusion and was not given intentionally. Lord Cardigan, who survived the battle, was hailed as a national hero in Britain. On the 26th of October 1863, the world's oldest governing football body, the Football Association, was created at the Freemasons Tavern in London. The foundation was instrumental in creating and formalising rules of the game. Before this, every area and organisation playing football or soccer made their own rules. Ebenezer Morley, a London solicitor who formed Barnes Football Club in 1862, could be called the father of the association. He wasn't a public school man, but old boys from several public schools joined his club, and there were feverish disputes about the way the game should be played. The laws, originally drafted by Morley, were finally approved at the sixth meeting on the 8th of December. They were published by John Lillywhite of Seymour Street in a booklet that cost a shilling and sixpence. The FA was keen to see its laws in action, and a match was played between Barnes and Richmond at Limesfield in Barnes on the 19th of December. The result was a nil-all draw.
Hi, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society with our regular wildlife recording feature. This month I have a special recording for you. It is by Chris Watson, who is our current president. He is also one of the world's most acclaimed recordists, known for his work on the BBC. And this is a recording that he made in Kenya's Masai Mara in Africa. He tells you all about the different animals during the recording, and I really hope that you enjoy it because it is a cracker.
I always enjoy our online listening sessions curated by Axel Drioli. And at the end of last year, the subject was feeding, and it prompted me to listen back to a series of recordings I made 20 years ago when I was location sound recordist for a BBC television series called Big Cat Diary. A team of us would stay out in a tented camp in Kenya's Masai Mara for 8 or 9 weeks, filming the daily lives of 3 species of cat: leopards, cheetahs and lions. Several times I was on the lion crew, and we would be out from 5 a.m. until after sunset each day, observing the activity of a local lion pride which lived around the Musiara Marsh, and so became known as the Marsh Pride. I say activity, however, of course, lions are mostly nocturnal, so we would often spend hours throughout the heat of the day watching out for the lions, who, quite sensibly, were undercover in the shade, hidden away in dense areas of croton thicket. If the pride had not been disturbed by elephants or buffalo during the day, they would usually emerge before sunset. Of course, I was in a very privileged position. I was part of a film crew with permission and license to film and record out in the Mara after sunset. But for myself, as sound recordist, these were the very best of times, as most of the animals out there were most vocal at night. The Marsh Pride consisted of a dominant male, 4 females, 3 juveniles, and 9 young cubs. And the first thing the cubs wanted to do when they emerged was play and then suckle. The low growling sounds on this track are from the females as they try to maintain order and corral the cubs. After an hour or so, the females would move off to hunt and leave the cubs with the juveniles. The male would follow the females at a respectful distance and not take part in the hunt. We'd also try to follow, but well behind, in a Land Cruiser with no lights, but equipped with military-grade night vision, infrared optics and starlight cameras. Of course, my microphones worked perfectly well in the darkness. This night, the lionesses came across a large herd of wildebeest and singled out a likely-looking animal from the edge. They quickly seized that animal and suffocated it with a powerful throat hold. By now, the male had caught up and strolled into the action after all the work had been done to take control of the carcass. This, however, was a dangerous time because the sounds and scent of the kill had quickly attracted a clan of spotted hyenas who gathered in numbers to try and push the lions off their prey. The standoff and the feeding continued for several hours until the lions eventually gave way to the hyenas. By sunrise, there was very little left of the carcass, and the hyenas retreated back across the plains to their dens. This gave me the opportunity to fix a couple of personal mics to the ribs of the unfortunate wildebeest and wait for the lappet-faced vultures to descend and feed upon the remains. The recordings were made from the roof of a Toyota Land Cruiser with a Sennheiser MKH 6030 middle and side rig on a 5-metre telescopic panoramic microphone pole. The vultures were recorded with a pair of Sony ECM55 personal mics and fixed onto a cable which was buried 30 metres back to our vehicle.
I'm Sue. This story is from Hertfordshire Life and it's called The Greatest Traveller. Exploring ancient civilizations and rising powers, Violet Cressy Marks became the most travelled woman of her age. 50 years after her death, we look at her incredible life. It's by Gillian Thornton. Package holidays and low-cost airlines have revolutionized our horizons over recent decades in ways that would have been unthinkable even 50 years ago. Intrepid explorer Violet Cressy Marks, former resident of Hazelwood House, now Hunton Park, on the outskirts of Watford, crisscrossed the world from the 1920s through to the 1950s as a scientist, reporter and explorer, long before travel insurance, routine inoculations and high-speed transport were the norm. When Violet became a fellow of the Royal Geographic Society in 1922, fewer than 8% of its 5,614 fellows were women. Fellows didn't need to hold geographical qualifications, explains Julie Carrington of the RGS Library. A general interest in geography, travel, or related matters was sufficient, and the ability to pay the annual subscription, of course. Violet had no trouble meeting any of the criteria. She had already travelled extensively and was declared a lady of independent means by her RGS proposer, who had met her in Alaska, Japan, and Java. So who was this extraordinary female pioneer? Born Violet Olivia Rutley on 9th of June 1895 in West Wickham, Greater London, Violet's early upbringing by wealthy parents is little documented. In October 1917, at just 22, she married Maurice Cressy Marks, a captain in the North Lanarkshire Regiment. But Violet clearly had her sights set beyond the shores of England. Their son William was just 4 when in 1925 his globe-trotting mother set off to travel overland from Cairo to Cape Town, an archaeologist first and foremost, going on to study ancient civilizations including Khmer, the Incas and Aztecs. Violet was also interested in zoology and ethnology. By 1931, at 36 years old, Violet was already on her fourth round-the-world journey, no mean feat at that time, let alone for a woman. Utterly fearless and unflappable, she generally travelled alone, pushing the boundaries of science wherever possible. She carried out archaeological studies from Egypt to Ethiopia, Palestine to Persia, bringing back still and moving pictures, many from politically sensitive areas. Some are lodged today in the archives of the British Film Institute in London. Violet's marriage to Morris was short-lived, although she kept his name after their divorce. By the time she married her second husband, Francis Edward Fisher, in 1931, she had already been to Albania and the Balkans, trekked through the Arctic with reindeer sleighs, and travelled through the Amazon and Andes to Peru by canoe and on foot. It was through Fisher that her connection with Hertfordshire began. A wealthy farmer and meat wholesaler in Watford, Fisher owned Hazelwood House, a large country house and estate in Abbots Langley. Violet had two more sons in the early 30s, defying tradition by naming them Ocean and Forest. Photographs in the archives of London's National Portrait Gallery show an elegant and serious woman in a variety of contrasting poses. Taken in 1926 by photographer Lafayette, the images show Violet in a Grecian-style evening dress with pearls and a bracelet around her upper arm, dressed in a plaid cape and a neat brimmed hat, and wearing a leather flying suit with her cap hanging nonchalantly from one hand. She looks self-contained but unassuming, essential qualities, one imagines, for a lone female traveller who needed to blend in. And despite her bravery and independence, she was, by all accounts, a modest woman who didn't seek fame or publicity. She does not, however, seem to have concerned herself too much with family obligations. Seemingly unencumbered by her husband and three young sons, Violet continued to travel extensively in an age where just getting to a destination could take several weeks. And yet she wrote just two books. Up the Amazon and Over the Andes was published in 1932, while 1940's Journey to China described her ambitious route from Madalay to the Kobi Nor on the fringes of the Gobi Desert. A widely quoted anecdote from the South American narrative gives a measure of Violet's stoicism and calm demeanour. Woken one night in the Amazon by a snake biting her below the self that she wasn't, I decided on coffee, a walk, and sleep. If I was going to die, I was at peace with the world, so there was nothing to worry about. But it was as a journalist and a war correspondent that Violet's words found the widest audience. In 1935, just a year after Forrest was born, she took the first motor transport from Addis Ababa to Nairobi during the Italian invasion and visited Ethiopian and Eritrean war fronts to send back written reports and cinefilm. 2 years later, she set off overland from Mandalay. 2 years later, she set off overland from Mandala to Peking, now Beijing, interviewing Mao Tse-tung for many hours at the remote cave dwellings at Yenning. Here, at the wartime communist headquarters, Violet studied the training methods of the Red Army. Not surprisingly, she was much in demand as a public speaker. In a talk to the Royal Central Asian Society in November 1938, Violet took a rapt audience behind the scenes of a year that involved spending 3.5 months in China, then Serbia, and after a brief spell in Europe, finished with 5 months back in China. Small wonder she spent little time at her Hertfordshire home. Her experience of world travel and dubious destinations led her to becoming special correspondent in Chongqing, China, for the Daily Express during the Second World War. Her eldest son, William Cressy Marks, served as a flight lieutenant with the RAF, but lost his life in March 1945, aged only 23, and lies today at Takyuan War Cemetery in Myanmar. After the war, Violet continued to report for the Express from the Nuremberg trials, but peacetime saw her back on the road, making a seventh round-the-world journey in 1955 and another a year later. It was said she visited every country in the world and had travelled by every mode of transport. Francis was occasionally allowed to accompany his wife abroad, but he largely lived at the couple's London property, leaving Hazelwood House empty for long periods or rented out. One of its most notable tenants was Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, exiled from his own country after the invasion by Italy in 1936. During the Second World War, the property became temporary offices for the Illustrated News Limited and Odum's Press, the base for publications such as the Tatler, the Bystander, and the Illustrated London News. Part of the estate was also taken over by the Ministry of Defence for production of Mosquito and Halifax aircraft. Francis retained the estate until the late 1950s, and in 1971 it was bought by businessman Paul Hember, who changed its name to Hunton Park. The dilapidated mansion was restored and turned into Hunton Park Hotel, first owned by the De Vere chain and now by Accor Hotels. Violet Cressy Marks died at her South Kensington home on September the 10th, 1970, and was buried in Hertfordshire at Langleybury Church, where her son William is recorded on the war memorial. Throughout her extraordinary life, she proved that women could achieve just as much as men, and often more. Her obituary in the Geographical Journal, published by the RGS, includes the observation: "Determination is the principal characteristic of Mrs. Cressy Mark's equipment as a traveller. She could not," it continues, "have hoped to accomplish many of her journeys without a fine disregard for safety and personal comfort." There is a popular belief that many of her trips to politically sensitive areas were facilitated in the corridors of government, possibly by the Secret Service. In her will, Violet asked that her biography be written by Bernard Ricketson Hatt, former editor-in-chief of Reuters, and that a copy be shown to the chief of MI5. But Ricketson Hatt predeceased her, and the biography was never written. If she had secrets, they remain that way. Her list of accomplishments, however, speak for themselves. As Vice Admiral Osborne declared when he introduced a 1938 talk at the Royal Central Asian Society, "She is well known all over the world as a very famous traveller and explorer, although I don't think she is known as widely as she should be, probably owing to her intense modesty." He described Violet as "the greatest living traveller of this age." 50 years after her death, it's very hard to disagree.
Hi, this is Bill, and with Bonfire Night coming up, author Harry Smee recounts the explosive story of his family's firework company, Brock's, creators of wonders and war-changing weapons. The most famous pyrotechnist in the world, the Fire King, Arthur Brock, moved his huge operation to Hertfordshire countryside in 1933. More than 200 workers relocated to and Vauxhall, where the family firm had once entertained London society. The move continued the remarkable history of Brock's fireworks, which began in 1698 in Islington. Renowned for the summer seasons at the Crystal Palace and its Brock's Benefit, a huge annual display, the company was synonymous with fireworks the world over. What was less well known was its links to warfare. In 1891, Brock's won a gold medal for its signal gun at the first Royal Naval Exhibition in Chelsea. An impressed visitor was Kaiser Wilhelm II, and that summer he was entertained at Crystal Palace with a Brock's display. So delighted was the Emperor, he asked his uncle, the future King Edward VII, to introduce him to Arthur for a detailed discussion. A quarter of a century later, Arthur manufactured millions of munitions to be used by the British forces in the First World War against Germany, and his son Frank was to become one of the most significant British officers of the conflict. Commissioned into the Army, the Navy, and the RAF, Frank worked as a spy, an intelligence officer, and as an inventor. One who knew him well described Frank as having a phenomenal memory and a natural ability as a chemist, perhaps not surprising since he was an eighth-generation pyrotechnist. In pursuit of keeping his customers happy, Frank's ancestor, the firm's founder, John Brock, blew himself up on Bonfire Night 1720. John's great-great-grandson, William Brock, suffered a major setback when his house in Baker's Row off Whitechapel Road, and most of the surrounding houses, were reduced to ash and rubble in 1825 due to the explosion of his raw firework materials. Luckily for William, he had popped out with his leading hands for breakfast and missed the conflagration. In due course, the business passed to William's grandson, Charles Brock died early of natural causes, but in his short life pioneered the use of magnesium for pyrotechnic illumination and introduced thrilling new concepts, including huge set pieces, living fireworks, and portraiture. He changed the way fireworks were manufactured, transported, and displayed. In doing so, he made Brock's the most famous firework manufacturer in the world, with factories in the UK, the USA, Turkey, and Australia. He also supplied Napoleon III's armies with pyrotechnics for his war with Prussia in 1870. On Charles's death in 1881, his brother Arthur took the reins and, following in the family tradition, built the business to even greater success. He placed Brock's firmly within the British Imperial project, travelling the world and using his fireworks at home and abroad to aid British diplomacy. His son Frank was born in 1884. With his five brothers, he attended Dulwich College, where he blew up his form-room stove in a wayward experiment. The headmaster rather admired fireworks Brock and let him off a disciplinary beating. After leaving Dulwich, he joined the family firm and for 12 years quartered the globe, orchestrating spellbinding displays. In 1905, Frank managed a colossal firework display at a review of the British fleet at Spithead as part of the Entente Cordiale with France. He may well have been spotted at this time, for he began to work on smokes for the Royal Navy. One country in which Brock's had built a good reputation was Germany. As its militarism grew more worrying, Frank, presenting himself as an American tourist, managed to enter the Zeppelin works on an open day. At close quarters, he was able to inspect the fearsome hydrogen-filled airships. Soon after war broke out in the summer of 1914, Frank was commissioned into the army, but made his interest in Zeppelins known to Murray Suter, who ran the Royal Naval Air Service. Suter borrowed him from the Royal Artillery, and arranging a temporary commission, sent him to France. In Paris, with another British officer, they were given false papers before making their way into Switzerland. From there, they entered Germany and reconnoitred the Zeppelin works in Friedrichshafen on the shore of Lake Constance. On his return to England, Winston Churchill ordered him to command a secret research establishment in East London. Here, as Zeppelin raids on the capital grew more intense, Frank developed an incendiary bullet designed to explode on contact with the outer material of the Zeppelin. The bullet would destroy airships from the first night it was used in September 1916, ending the Kaiser's dream of air supremacy. Londoners cheered as finally their country was able to hit back at the huge monsters that had killed and terrified them for 18 months. After finding an answer to the Zeppelins, Frank turned his attention to the U-boats that were sinking increasing numbers of Allied ships. He helped prevent German domination of the Channel by inventing giant flares that lit up the sea at night and forced U-boats into deep minefields. The technology was still used in the Pathfinder flares dropped by the RAF in the Second World War to illuminate targets. Another of his inventions, artificial fog, to mask attacking vessels, played a pivotal role in the war's most daring raid at Zeebrugge on St. George's Day 1918. There, Frank destroyed several gun positions personally before succumbing in a sword fight on the seawall. After his death, the Navy installed his smokescreen on many ships and the Army on British tanks, and it was still being used by the Royal Navy in the Second World War. From the Hemel factory, the great shows were created for the official peace display of 1946 and the Queen's coronation display of 1953. Brock's continued to flourish through the 1950s and 60s, providing most of the displays used as the British Empire was dismantled. In 1971, the factory was sold for housing, and the business moved to Scotland. Today, thousands live on the Hemel site, where millions of fireworks and military munitions were once made. For many years, the home of the most famous firework company in the world.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme.
It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Penny, Bob, Hilary and Lucy for the news, John for the radio listings, our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio-described TV listings, TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and Chris Watson of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for the sounds of the Masai Mara. David read the events in history, and Sue gave us the Heart's Life story about Violet Cressy Marks. Steve will be here next week with News Extra, but that's all from me in October 2024. We close with Rackhouse Pilfer and Fallen Leaves. I do hope you enjoy it. Goodbye for now, and stay safe.
Hard to believe it's you and me. We were singing a song about freedom and change. Look in your eyes like it meant everything. My Maria, my sweet refrain, my Lucia, falling leaves will remain. Secrets anymore. Here I stand, let the hammer fall. No hidden thoughts, no disguise. You look at me with perfect eyes. Always remember the times we had. Those not with us anymore. Keep them safe inside your heart. Keep them safe, my friend. My Maria, my sweet refrain. My Lucia, falling leaves will remain. Falling leaves will remain. Come away, come and dance away our cares. No, there's no one here but friends. Let's go out and dance away our cares. Come away, come away, come away, come and dance away our cares. No, there's no one here but friends. Let's go out and dance away our cares.
My Maria, my sweet refrain, my Lucia, falling leaves will remain.